Here we are. Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM station. I am your host, Wes Gear. Thank you for tuning in. This show is also brought to you by New Vista Behavioral Health. They have a bunch of different treatment programs out there. Mental health, addiction, helping professionals, all sorts of stuff. If you need help, definitely check out New Vista Behavioral Health. This is Rock to Recovery Radio.
Whoop, whoop.
Yeah, there she is. Who's there? You guys don't know yet. Maybe you do if you saw our Instagram or whatever. So why are we here? I always start off the show by talking about this. Look, you know, we're in a day and an age where we talk about addiction. We talk about mental health. We're talking about the suicides that are happening out there. We're talking about the ODs. It's nothing new. There was a time not so long ago that this stuff didn't get talked about. We didn't talk about how much, I think I said this last week, how much Uncle Larry drank every night. You know, but now everybody's talking about their childhood and their trauma. We're talking about wounded warriors that we lose 22 to suicide a day, which they say is much, much more than that. So the idea of this radio show isn't to be a giant bum out. It's to empower those looking for answers. And by sharing information, we can help each other recover. But the thing is that I like to talk about, you know, there's a lot of recovery groups and meetings where people talk and 12-step and all stuff people share. You know, it's not always just complaining and whining. What we find out is in the solution, we turn into these incredible people and we have these incredible lives. And we get into what I call the vortex of radness. Because, you know, if you're a guy like me, I thought life was going to suck when I got sober. And then you kind of think like, well, wait, my life sucks now. And you hear these stories of people that recover and you go, wow, I kind of went through that same thing, or they had something worse, or they had something easier. But you realize that people are getting through it and having incredible lives. So that's why we're here talking about it. So we interview rock stars and celebs and, you know, athletes and wounded veterans. We interview all sorts of people. And today we have somebody I'm very happy. We're going to do something we've never done in the studio today. And we have somebody here I'm very happy to have here. She is a beautiful young woman, guitar player, singer, songwriter. She writes, you write with all sorts of people.
Hi.
Yeah, there she is. You know, you got to hit the knobs, the right knobs. It helps. So you said you write all sorts of pop music.
Pop music. I love it.
You love it. That's rad. But if you heard her sing and play, because I know a lot of people, a lot of people, they hear pop and they go, oh, bubblegum right away.
Right.
But when you sing and when you play, there is soul and just grit on there.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. It's a beautiful thing to witness. Kind of the power of social media, how we got you here. So chalk one up to Instagram.
Thanks, Zuckerberg.
Yeah, right? Thank you, Zuckerberg. So, and she is sober.
I am.
4.5 years.
4.5 years. Isn't that crazy?
Yep. Hailing from which town?
So I'm originally from Manchester, New Hampshire.
Manchester, New Hampshire.
So it's about an hour north of Boston.
Very nice. Boston, Massachusetts, for those of you who are geographically challenged. So with no further ado, welcome to the studio, MB Padfield.
Hi. It's good to hear.
I'm glad you're here. Thanks for coming down.
Yeah.
I'm waving my arms like a frantic man. Nobody can see
it. But they love it. They love it.
My arms love it. They love having something to do. So if you're wondering what I said, her name is MB, Mary. I don't know. What does it stand for? Do you want to say?
Oh, man. No, this is such a long story. We only have an hour. So my birth name is Meredith, but even my parents called me MB when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
So I've kind of just always been MB at this point. I still have some like immediate family members that call me Meredith, but it's not really something I respond to usually.
You're like, I don't hear you.
Well, no, I don't. My ears don't perk up, I guess, the same way. But
sure, sure. Yeah, it's like if you call the dog Bob and his name was Spot, he's not going to.
Right.
Not that I'm likening you to
Spot's given name was Bob. He may not respond to Bob after a while.
Yeah, totally. So what's the B stand for?
Oh, that's such a long story. My father says it depends on the day.
But hey, we can just go there. So it's Meredith, depends on the day, Hadfield.
My middle name is Rose. I have my mom's middle name. I have my mom's name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But we can leave it at that. Everything doesn't have to be answered, but I wanted people to know the name and get it because I had a band called Head PE.
Okay.
I'd explain that a lot.
And I'm sure.
It was a pain in the you know what. And so I want the name to sink into people's heads. I can get it. Right. When people don't get it. Because people used to go, oh, you're playing a band? What band? I'd go, Head PE. And they go, what? I'd be like, never
mind. How do you spell that? It's not exactly the spelling bee. They don't use Head PE as their spelling bee word.
They don't.
No.
Head PE. What, you have herpes? No, that's not what I said. Okay. Anyhow, let's get to you. We've cajoled enough.
All right.
Is that the proper use of the word cajole?
I'm not sure. I think so. I believe so. I'm going to have to double check that. I can Google that if you want.
Definition of cajole. I'm putting it on the phone right now. Persuade someone to do something by sustained coaxing or flattering. Not really.
Nah.
No. All right. Well, anyhow, we're goofing around. So let's get down to it. What's cool about MB is that you're young. And the reason it's cool. I'm going to tie it in and give it a reason.
All right.
It's not just that youth is a beautiful thing. No, what it is that in a time when recovery started in the 30s, when people were starting to recover from these hopeless states of mind and body with alcoholism and drug addiction, you know, you hear the stories of like it was a bunch of old men smoking cigarettes. And now there's a beautiful movement happening that people are getting younger sober. And so when you have in the studio a girl who is, I'm doing the math, you're 23?
Yes.
Bing, 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 bing. You're 23 years old and you play music. You do sessions with hip hop artists, which Lord knows they're smoking weed nonstop.
If I'm lucky.
Like, I mean, it's just like a cloud of weed. I've been in those sessions. It doesn't stop. The same way there's smoke machines for rock bands in a hip hop music session, there's a weed smoke machine endlessly.
Yeah, the fog machines. Fog machines.
Yeah. And so anyhow, I think that tea got me all spazzing out. So you're only 23 years old, and you're already 4.5 years sober, and you're playing music actively, not like in your garage or just recording on YouTube. You're out there playing shows, which is a testament that it can be done.
Absolutely. I'm a full-time musician. I don't have any other job. This is all I do. This is all I've ever done, actually. I've never held a real job in my life.
And that is what is exciting about having you on the show. It's the only thing.
Okay. That's it.
All right, that's all the time we have. So, check it out. I'm looking at the radio thing, make sure I press the buttons right. I am not sure. It looks weird. It looks really weird, but that's okay. We have a solution for you. We have a special thing we're going to do here tonight in the studio. But here's how we do it. Usually I ask people, where would you start your story? Because some people, I heard a little bit from you when we hang out before the show. But some people tie in their childhood. And a lot of people say, you know, this happened to me in my childhood. It doesn't make me an alcoholic, but it's relevant to my recovery.
Right.
For you, where do you start your journey in the sense of the recovery story?
Right. So my sobriety story was different than my recovery story. So I was about a year sober. And I thought, this is the promised land, and I was absolutely miserable. So if you want to talk about where, like, my recovery started, it was not when I first got sober.
Yeah, so we'll do – that's like being dry drunk or whatever.
Right, yeah.
So how was it when you're growing up? Is there anything in your childhood, or do you remember feeling a certain way that's relevant?
Yeah, I mean, I was a weird kid, definitely. I wasn't very good socially, so I would mostly just do my own thing. I still wanted to be around people, but I never really clicked with people my own age, so I had a really hard time with that. I bounced around from school to school. My mom would pick me up every day from the principal's office for either getting in a fight or mouthing off. Mouthing off was one of my favorites.
In New Hampshire?
In New Hampshire, yeah. I tried doing public school. I went to a – at the time I thought I really wanted to be an ER physician. So I was, like, dead set on this, like, medical career thing. And mm-hmm. So I went to traditional school for kindergarten through, what, sixth grade? Yeah, kindergarten through sixth grade.
Public school.
Yeah. And then I went to a charter school for 2 years where I did 6 years of school in 2 years. And it was amazing. I mean, like, I learned so much. But I think when you have a lot of like kids that are very specialized. You know, you have a lot of skills, like intellectually they may be I can't say here because you guys, they may be lower, and then I'm going to slowly raise my hand for emotionally. You know, there's a bit of a disconnect. So I did 2 years of, that. And then I was kicked out of another school of that school. I've been kicked out of so many schools, I lost count.
Why were you getting kicked out? Behavioral disorders.
Behavioral disorders, yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Being a punk. Yeah. Do you remember how you felt, why you were acting up?
I mean, I don't know why. I think it was like I never quite felt okay with myself, which I know is like a common thing with people in recovery, that we all have, for whatever reason, this common feeling of not being okay, ergo we need to do something to feel okay. Because if everything was good in the hood, nobody would really, you know, why would I want to change it? If my life was amazing, why would I want to alter my mind state? So from there, I had enough credits to graduate high school. However, I was too young to take the GED at the time. I was 14. And my mom was kind of getting into like progressive schooling type. So
you had enough credits at 14 to graduate high school.
Yeah.
How did that happen?
I did 6 years of school in 2 years at that specialized math and science. It was like a STEM school.
Oh, got you. Okay.
Yeah. And it was great. I mean, I got that and I think some college credits at the time. But definitely was a lot of work. And then, so when I was 14, there is basically, at least in the state of New Hampshire, you graduate high school when you just kind of say you graduate high school. It's like, I'm graduated now and I move my own tassel.
I went through the same thing at a continuation school.
Yeah.
So Wes, come to the office. Yeah. You're graduated.
Great.
Just like that?
Yeah.
All this hell I've been through all these years. And they're like, yeah. And I started crying and left.
See, I think they were just trying to get rid of me. They're like, yeah, we're going to graduate you. Yeah. Right? It's like the old mob guys. They go to college, right? Yeah. They just couldn't wait to get rid of me.
They are done.
So I started going to community college when I was young. And I started doing all my undergrad stuff. And up until then, I had not had a drink or a drug. My first drink was at 16, and my last drink was at 18.
That is insane.
Yeah, it was a lot.
Actually, you are very sane. I don't know. It's cool. But, you know, I read early on when I was in recovery and doing the, you know, the thing we do, learning about the disease of addiction, et cetera, that women especially, and I'm no expert, but I read that women especially can go through the phases of the disease, if you will, very quickly, oftentimes more quickly than men.
That's what I was told, too, and I thought that was funny because I've met a lot of people who had this similar experience. So I didn't feel nearly as alone. And they say, like, women hit their bottoms a lot faster than men. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sure everyone is different, but I guess on average women hit their bottoms faster. I don't know. I hit my bottom real quick.
Or there's many cases of that or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
So tell us about that first drink. How'd that come to be?
All right. So first drink, I was kind of like, I guess a straight edge, you would say. I kind of saw what drinking did to the people around me and my family, and I didn't want to be that. And I, you know, I would never turn out to be that. And hi, my name is MB, and I'm an alcoholic now, but in an ironic twist of fate. So I saw it was around, and I just didn't.
What were you seeing?
I mean, mostly drinking. Pretty much just drinking. And that's all I really saw growing up. And it wasn't anything.
Your family, immediate family.
Yeah, I mean, my mom's. It's funny, my mom's a normie. She'll, I like virgin drinks now. They're fun. So when I go out to a bar, I'll get like a virgin mojito.
Or mocktails.
They call them mocktails, yes.
Yeah.
And it's funny. Like she'll have like a half a glass of Guinness and be totally cool. And to me, that's just a crazy idea.
But like, that wasn't what was dissuading you from wanting a drink. What were you witnessing that was like, I'm straight at, you know, having that straight edge vibe?
Right. I mean, I definitely saw a lot of the things that my family went through, you know, crashed cars, that sort of thing.
So was it alcoholic behavior?
Alcoholic
behavior or just people were screwing up?
Mostly alcoholic behavior. You know, I mean, you and I know.
Who is the worst in your family?
I can't put him over the coals right now.
Why not? How about now?
He's doing good now.
He's and doing so, good. So somebody in your family.
Yeah.
So without saying names, there were people who struggled with drinking or would you say alcoholics?
I would say, I mean, I would love to be like, oh, they're an alcoholic, blah, blah, blah. But that's
to decide. Right. And we don't need to out them. Right. But definitely significant struggles that made you say, wow, this can be a problem.
I definitely saw like how fast it could go. And so when I saw, so I was like, I mean, maybe I was just so afraid of it at the time, where like it was almost like slightly alluring, but like I was too afraid to take my first drink. I remember I was like terrified the first time I did shots. I mean, yeah. I didn't know what I was doing, getting myself into. But I decided, I never, when I was drinking, I was never like, oh, I'll just, you know, hang out with my friends. No, I was drinking to get drunk. And
sure.
And at first, you know, people are like, oh, well, that's just a phase, you learn to regulate. You know, I was told by, you know, like, oh, well, you'll learn to regulate it. And for whatever reason, I guess normally people with their first drinking experience, they don't punch anybody in the face. So.
Well, some do, some don't. I've definitely heard some where they do.
Yep. That was my experience.
So was there, I'm just curious, because sometimes, I'm not trying to give myself credit, but sometimes in these interviews, we kind of uncover and connect some stuff that maybe wasn't connected before or whatever. So you were kind of angry as a kid.
Yes, Dr. Wes.
Totally. My dad was Dr. Gear. Were you observing anything in terms of alcoholic behavior, do you think, that was happening in your home or around you that was making you angry? As
absolutely.
A kid?
Yeah, oh. I mean, absolutely. You feel like, oh, well, they don't care about me enough to do X, Y, Z, right? And it's like sometimes even watching that, you don't realize it. I don't know, maybe.
How it's manifesting.
Right, how it's, or what was actually going on. Because what looked like something innocent was, you know, not. And yeah.
Plus, you don't know it's your normal. It's your
right.
life.
Right, absolutely. I mean, it's just, it was kind of a combination, I think, of a lot of factors and stress and things that were going on. And I'm someone that I work really, really hard, and I have a hard time saying no to things. You know, if I say no, I'm either ridiculously busy at this point, and that's the only time. Mm-hmm. And so I was just kind of stacking things on top of myself, and there was a lot of pressure, and I was doing college, and I did two semesters, and I do 2 years? I don't remember. Doesn't matter.
This is like when you're brand
when
new
I was,
in college.
Yeah.
We're still setting up the first drink.
Right, before the first drink, right? So I always felt like I wasn't a part of, I didn't really have any friends. I quite literally didn't have any friends as a kid. And
why
do
you say that?
I don't know. I definitely had weird hobbies. You know what I mean?
Like what?
Like knitting. Like what 14-year-old's like super excited about knitting that you know?
I mean, I want to say, because I'm a Californian, people in New Hampshire. But let's not do that.
But it's cold up there.
Right. You need mittens. That's what I meant.
Well, I always have like weird hobbies or things that I get really into. I'll go through like phases of, I have to learn everything about this one thing. My parents were small business owners. And so the majority of the time that I spent before and after school was with my meme, my grandmother, French Canadian.
Okay.
And so she taught me to do a lot of stuff. So I was
knitting,
like,
knitting being one of them.
Knitting, crocheting, sewing, gardening. But I'm not good at that. And my meme is like a plant whisperer. She's crazy. Mm. She just, every time she can bring things back from the dead, it's insane.
Plants.
Right. Yeah. Honestly, she could probably work her voodoo magics in other ways.
Because I know a few pets we'd like to bring back.
Yeah. I'll put meme on that. And I learned to do a lot of different things, sewing. And then my uncle lived at the house as well. And I learned to do a lot of, like, construction stuff. And it was fun. I liked building stuff. I liked working with my hands. I liked creating. I had, like, little – I think I told you about, like, I had, like, a small business running out of the elementary school selling chocolate-covered mm-hmm. pretzels, gummy bears, all sorts of stuff.
Very industrious.
Right. I was always like looking for something new. I was always looking for a challenge. And then.
So that made you not have so many friends. You're kind of
right.
like a loner. And
right. And also I had a hard time, and I, you know, and sometimes I still do have a difficult time, you know, managing my emotions, where for somebody that like, I feel like the world is very, other people, I guess, would you say, quote unquote, normal people that I've met don't describe their experience in the world the same way that I do, because I feel like things are very intense for me. You know what I mean? Like emotions, I either really feel something or I feel nothing. You know, I'm very much an all or nothing personality. And if the world flicks me in the face, it feels like it's coming in with a baseball bat. Mm. So learning to cope, I didn't cope very well. And, you know, I was made fun of. I was bullied. I had like a knife pulled on me. I mean, I definitely, when I was in public school system and even in that STEM school that I was doing, I still didn't have a great experience. And it wasn't until I started, I was a full-time musician. At the time, I was playing nursing homes. Those were my first gigs, were nursing homes. And I would get paid like $85 to play.
That's cool.
Basically to old people. And like I would do like standards and I would do like the Andrew Sisters. I would do like all, you know, the older stuff that I was listening to with my meme. She would either have Rush Limbaugh on or she would have the like the French Canadian like jazz station. But none of it was in English. That's the funny part. So I think I picked up a lot of my melodic stuff and like my love for melody because I don't speak any French and not French Canadian, nothing. I mean, I know it when she swears, but she says it very quietly. She is a very good Catholic woman.
Mm-hmm. Sure she is. No, I'm just kidding. So you had a unique childhood.
Yeah.
And so
different.
How did that first drink come to happen?
So, I mean, I really struggled to have friends. I say this honestly, I had no friends when I was a kid. I had my cousin Miles and, you know, mm-hmm. we would get into sorts of all trouble together. We would have businesses and develop schemes to build cars and, you know, all sorts of stuff. And I just kind of wanted to feel normal.
Uh-huh.
I wanted to feel a part of, right? Because I felt like definitely a weirdo and I wouldn't do or say the right things, I guess, socially. And especially like around other kids, I wasn't cool. I didn't have like the new Jordans and I didn't have like, you know, I didn't care about designer clothes, and I just really didn't have anything in common. And then I was always so disruptive in class that I pretty much felt like I, you know,
yeah,
I got like blackballed from sixth grade. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just wanted to feel a part of, and I finally kind of found a couple people that I, you know, was like, oh, I think they're my friends, and I drank. I think it was like Zenka. It was like, pink lemonade Zenko. It was the nastiest hangover in the morning. I remember that. It was just
so gnarly. Your friends, you had somebody had an idea like, hey, let's
go and let's drink, and I did, and I thought like, all right, well, this is how I'm gonna make friends, right?
Drinking.
Yeah, I was That's also a really too. Ugly kid, so I had a difficult
Wait,
time
what?
Making. Yeah, I had a bit of like the ugly duckling syndrome. I'm good now. I'm cured. But I was definitely, my mom even admits to it. It's all right.
Your mom admits to it.
Yeah, she admits to it.
Thanks, Mom. I mean, if we had a video show, we could flash pictures on the screen, but we don't. We'll have to take your word for it.
I would do very weird things as a child. Like, I would my favorite outfit was this red shirt with a blue sweater brown shirt, blue sweater, red glasses, just very, very weird. You know,
I feel like a lot of us kids, like you go back to pictures, we're looking kind of messed up.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
So when you drank, was it a lot of times you hear people go, oh, you know, the relief I got, it was incredible. Did you feel that?
I did. I definitely felt that sense of ease and comfort and like that release and that like everything's cool now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, it was crazy because the minute I felt that way in the slightest, I wanted more. And, you know, I thought I just had I was normally drinking, right? As, you know, kids experiment, kids, they drink. I mean, it's funny because most people that I talk to, when they say, like, they started drinking or using drugs, you know, it's like, I've heard, you know, 8 years old, I've heard 11, I've heard 12, I've heard, you know, the common age is around, like, from what I've heard, around 14-ish.
Yeah, that was me. Weed, yeah. 14, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it was like, that's pretty much, so I started relatively late, I guess, according to...
Yeah, maybe by average, just 16.
Yeah.
It's not super late, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I was straight edge, and I was like, you know, I was definitely, I saw those things that I didn't want to be, and I think I rebelled against them so hard because I kind of knew where I was going to go. I kind of knew, you know, my mind gets very fixated on, like, certain things, and it makes
Obsession
me really good.
Obsession of the mind.
Right, and it makes me really good at what I do professionally. However, personally, I mean, it causes issues, right?
Yeah. So how long after that first drink until you drank again?
It wasn't immediate. And that was the funny part. I think I drank once and it was such like I punched a guy in the face that I didn't even know. And now I have
the first time you drank.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I have no idea. Yeah. So far, so
you
good.
You probably deserved it.
No, it was so sad. I feel like such. I was.
You know,
so mean.
You remember?
I remember bits and pieces and then people told me after. And that's always the worst, right?
That's a bad feeling.
I remember. I really just desperately wanted friends as a kid. I just didn't want to feel as alone.
Now, do you have songs you wrote from that time that you still remember?
I don't. So when I first started writing, I mean, I did, but they were, I just think I loved melody and I loved being able to replicate and like replicate, but create something new. And like, you know, the same way that construction people use lumber to build houses, some construction people build way cooler houses than other ones. You know what I mean? But they're sure. still using the same tools. So I didn't really, I had like a couple songs. I had like a 6-song demo.
I want to hear, because usually we would put in a musical break right about now. But I don't see our songs being loaded in the system as per the huge. But that's okay, because we hooked it up because you brought your acoustic. So
we
here's what here's what I want to hear right now. If you can do it. This is our first time Rock Recovery Radio, really, with acoustic guitar in here. I want to hear a song that came out of that madness.
Yeah, I got
that angst or whatever. Can you give us a little bit of that?
Yeah, and I'll talk about it. So this one is called The Beast in...
when was it written? How old were you?
I started, it was one of those ones where you got like the song seed and then like years later for whatever reason.
Totally.
And I started writing this one when I was writing that, like when I was 16.
And you were just,
And it was, absolutely.
What was the song seed? Can you take, this will be cool too, because this is Rock Recovery Radio. We like to talk about art and stuff.
Yeah.
What was the seed? Was it, and this is interesting for people who don't write,
right?
Because they always ask, and this happens to you, I'm sure, when you write a song, do you start with lyrics or start with the guitar? Do you, and it, and it can be anything.
Yeah,
there's no way. Sometimes it's a beat. So what was the song seed for this one?
So when I was younger, I especially, I pretty much laser focused in on lyrics. And, you know, every lyric had to mean something, right?
Sure.
And I was so caught up in, like, the fear of anxiety of... After that, like, first demo that I did, that, like, anything that I had to do from then on had to sound like John Mayer. You know what I mean? Like, I just had to be ready to go. And that's a lot of pressure to put on a 16-year-old kid. And that pressure was put on by myself. You know, there was people, nobody around me was, like, putting a gun to my head and telling me that I had to play guitar and write songs and be really good at it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, those are the pressures.
Self-imposed pressure.
Right. And I think that happens to creative people and people that are ambitious. But
a lot
this,
of people, do that to themselves. And it can be very maddening, that's for sure.
So the song seed that I got was, I remember lyrically, it was, "There's a beast inside of you. Funny how you said the things you'd never do came true." And I think I wrote the hook at that point. And it, is it ironic or is it just me that you're everything you never thought you'd turn out to be? Hold on. If I sing it, I'll get it. But this song, I think it definitely, like, everyone thought it was, like, about a relationship, but it was really an autobiography about the things that were going on in my life. And I tried to stop drinking, you know, a couple times. I was like, oh, I got to, like, slow down. But for whatever...
This is when you're 16?
17, right, definitely
we'll
18.
Come back to that in a second.
Right, but this is important
Okay.
All right, so I was, like, trying, and I couldn't figure out all of these things that I told myself that I would never be. It was like I was looking in the mirror right at them. And that's like a scary thing because you're like, oh, I'm never going to do that. I'm never going to do that. Mm. Never going to be that. Never going to say that. And then the next day.
So you're talking about all the lines you crossed.
Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah,
I totally get that. And we do that, right?
Right.
I'm never going to snort coke.
Right.
I'm never going to get drunk and punch a guy.
Right. I've never done any hard drugs. That's the crazy part. I was just straight an alcoholic. I mean, I smoked weed a couple times, didn't even get high, didn't like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I knew where it was going. You know what I mean? Like, I knew that it was not doing what I wanted to do and being the person I wanted to be. I couldn't keep doing that. So this song is called The Beast.
We all right.
Good levels on this.
Yeah, I'm trying to give you a little bit.
Awesome. All right.
All right.
There's a beast inside of you. Funny how you said the things you never do came true. Is it ironic or is it just me that you're everything you said you never turned out to be? Cause you ate my heart right off of my sleep. You dragged me back to you then when I'm ready to leave. And I'm not sure what to think and I don't know what to do. But I let you know soon as I remember to move. And I know that I survived, but I'd much rather be alive. Forever paralyzed by your wonderful lies. I got this hopeless dedication to the same old frustration of you. There's a beast inside of you. Funny how you said the things you never do came true. Oh.
sides of everything you said you never turned out to be. Cause there's a beast inside of you. There's a beast inside of you. It's not a cutout. I'm used to a cutout. Beast inside of you. Inside of you. So tell me again, how is this all gonna end? Would you destroy me like you do to pretend that we can be friends? Empty threats for the promises. And now that you're burned the bridge, you won't cross me again. Cause there's a beast inside of you. Funny how you said the things you never do came true. Is it ironic or is it test me? That you're everything you said you never turned out to be. And all those lines are far behind from where I thought they stood. And to be seized and then released don't feel like freedom should. There's a beast inside of you. Funny how you said the things you never do came true. Is it ironic or is it just me? That's all of everything you said you never turned out to be. There's a beast inside of you. There's a beast inside of you. There's a beast inside of you. Ooh, what to do with the beast inside of you?
Yeah.
That was called A Beast.
I dig it. Yeah. It's so you're kind of talking to yourself in that song, aren't you?
Right. And I think there's a lot of people that equate, you know, the way that they drank or used drugs to like a love or
like the
greatest love affair, right?
Oh yeah.
And it's what, like one of those common practices in rehab, you have to write a goodbye letter. To,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's your girlfriend. Well, for me, maybe it's, I guess for you, it'd be a boyfriend.
Right. And, it was a lot of learning. It was difficult. I think when I first got sober, I was 18 and I didn't go to treatment. I had no idea about any recovery community-based systems that all hang out in church basements. I had no idea.
You just knew you needed help.
Right. I knew I needed help. I didn't really know what that looked like. And, you know.
Surprising, even today, people still don't.
I mean, you could Google it, but you still have no clue.
Yeah. What's that?
Right, exactly. And then
AAA.
Right. And then I was going, I mean, the number 12 is great. And, you know, I would go to these places and then they would say these words that I just like didn't understand. And I mean, as someone that just loved words so much, it was so difficult for me to sit there and feel like everyone else is speaking a foreign language around me. But what I was doing wasn't working. I thought the trajectory that I was doing, I thought drinking was my problem. So if I sold my car, I would stop drunk driving.
Yeah, I like that. You told me that, too. That is a common thing that, like for me, I got kicked out of high school for smoking weed. What my friend says, he said, he points out, did we think about quitting smoking weed? No.
Right.
Did you think about quitting drinking? No. Get rid of the car.
Right. Like, of course.
Yeah. For me, I went to another school. Right. Oh, you kicked me out for smoking weed? Next school, please.
Right. Next. Yeah. It's like, you're basically on speed dating for schools, right?
Yeah. It's like powerlessness.
Right.
It's taking control of our lives and we don't realize it.
Right. And trying to like seize back that control when you really don't have any.
Yeah.
And right. So I had the solution for everything, right? I was like, well, there was all these problems that I thought myself into that I thought that I could think myself out of. Right. And logic of that just doesn't make sense because it's my thinking that brought me to the place where I was. How is my thinking going to get me out of it?
Exactly. Or they say you can't fix like a broken mind with a broken mind.
Right. Exactly. I mean, you're trying to combat. It's just not going to work. So I kind of like I gave up and I was like, there was no, you know, big fireworks. I didn't have to like. You know, there was no like big thing that happened that I like decided I needed to get sober. It was just that I was done. I was tired. I was tired of feeling the way that
I was feeling.
How
did that happen? So you're 16, you drink, it felt good. You punch a guy, whatever.
I don't know which felt better. What?
Yeah. You had some anger issues and what have you.
Yeah.
But what, I mean, we hear the progression in that right. You were concerned about getting a DUI, so you sold right. your car.
Right.
That's hysterical to me. You could probably buy a lot of Rumpelmans.
And I went to school in Boston because if I was in Boston, I would sell my car. And I remember telling my mom, we were in like a Dunkin' Donuts drive-thru. I remember telling her, I'm going to go to Berkeley and I'm going to drink. That way you can't tell me that I can't. You know what I mean? I was definitely like, I was dead set on this college thing. Because I went to like community college when I was 14. I wasn't going to a party school. I mean,
yeah,
you know, it wasn't. And
were friends giving you a hard time? Were you screwing up in school?
I mean, if I had any friends, they probably would. But
so you're still even in college.
In college. I mean, I had trouble with, I'm not a school musician, and that's totally cool with me. I understand enough, but I'm a hands-on learner. So I didn't really, music school really wasn't my thing. I mean, I went to Berkeley and I had a scholarship. You know, I was doing well.
So even going to Berkeley.
Yeah.
And there's musicians are kind of weird anyhow.
Right.
And you still didn't find some weirdos to hang with?
I mean, I had my roommate and I had like a couple friends that I knew.
So the roommate's like the forced friend.
Right. Aren't they always?
Yeah.
They're like
what was your roommate's name?
Sierra.
All right, Sierra. Yes, I know.
She lives in Nashville now. You can go hang out with her next
week.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask her some dirt. I'm going to be like, hey, tell me what MB was doing all drunk.
Oh, man. I was like falling asleep on like a skateboard. Like I would just pass out. I would black out. I was drunk by noon. I was a morning drinker. So it went from like this, like maybe every time I would drink, I'd always get drunk.
Sure.
There was one time that I remember I had like one beer, but it was just because I couldn't drink enough to get me drunk enough for me to want to drink more.
Yeah.
So when I did that, I realized that there was an issue when, you know, people would tell me the things that I said or did when I was drunk. You know, I was highly emotional. I just kind of felt like everything that I felt on the inside got flipped inside out and I could finally just let things go, right?
When you're drunk.
When I was drunk, yeah, when I was drinking. And then combined with the pressures of music school and, you know, there was kids at Berkeley that had perfect pitch and, you know, just like had went to school for music before they went to high school and they had high school music classes so they could read or they had ear training background. And I just didn't do well. And I remember like, you know, you're an alcoholic when you're the only person in your class that's drunk at 10 a.m. in the morning.
I mean, 10 a.m. and you're like 17.
Right. I was 18 at the time. Yeah. And
yeah.
I knew. And then I was a daily. And then it started like. It started being, I started drinking with what they call intent, where I don't feel okay, I'm going to drink. And and me going to drink, it means I'm getting drunk. And I remember my first ear training teacher, he looked at me, I was obliterated, and he looked at me, he goes, you know, if you can't pass ear training one, you should really reconsider a career in music. And anyways, hi, I'm here in Laguna Beach on a radio show.
Yeah, well, it's hard to have good. It's hard to have good ears when you're drunk.
Right, absolutely. And it wasn't. You know, it's funny because people are like, "Oh, well, if the substance was just my problem, if drinking was just my problem, then I'd be able to stop drinking and everything would be fine, right?" Because alcohol was the solution to my problems. So I take away the solution, and I still have all of my problems that I have to deal with. So for that first year of sobriety, I was so miserable. I was white knuckling. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't really have a recovery support network. I just like asked my parents to not have booze in the house. And, you know, my mom was great with that. You know, I didn't know what to do. And so I did this thing. And I went with someone to this. I went to hang out in a church basement this one time. And it was pretty fun. And everything was cool. I was terrified.
So you went to some sort of recovery meeting.
Right. And I found
that was your first one.
And, well, I went to my first one. I was, you know, dating a guy when I was 17. And he identified himself as an alcoholic. And, you know, the things that he was saying and the things that he was doing, I was like, wow, I feel that way too. That was the first time I remember identifying with the thoughts and actions of that. And, you know, I went to this place for him, right? He was like, well, you know, if you drop me off in the morning, I'll go. Mm. And so that was my first, I guess,
so you
experience.
Hung out with him in a recovery group?
Right, yeah. And, I mean, I was like, wow, this is nice. I'm so glad I'm not an alcoholic.
Yeah,
I'm not like you guys.
This is great for you guys, but I got this thing figured out. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, a year into my sobriety, I was a year sober. I was miserable and I was suicidal. I didn't want to live anymore. I thought what's the point of drinking, or what's the point of living if I can't be happy? And like, if I can't drink, I'm not as, you know, I felt like I was just playing a losing game.
Yeah.
I didn't understand that like there was this amazing world and this like amazing like system and these networks of people that like felt and thought the same way that I do. And when my eyes finally got open to that and like open to that possibility, it saved my life.
Yeah.
And actually today is, I mean, I normally love getting dreary every once in a while, but today is actually the anniversary of, on the East Coast at least, October 22nd is the anniversary of my bass player's death.
Oh, and for 1 year?
3 years.
It's
been 3 years since Cody passed away. And he was my bass player. He's a bit of a handful. And to be honest, I didn't like the kid at all. I mean, I loved him, but I didn't like him sometimes. And
so he, 3 years. So you were already sober a year.
I was sober a year. Definitely a mess. And I didn't feel okay. And then when Cody died, he had... His drug of choice was heroin, and he killed himself. But he had to get high first before he did. Apparently, he tried before, and he died using. And at the time, I had no idea what to do, what to say, how to help him, or you know, do anything, right? Because you want to, but you don't really know. And then I'm so caught up in my own head that
I can't wasn't transmit there. What you don't have.
Right, and I wasn't able to be present, and. And today, that's not my experience. And I remember when I was feeling those feelings about a year into my sobriety, that I was able to pick up the phone and call someone that understood and that wasn't just calling me crazy or wasn't telling me that I was overreacting, because I'm not. These are really, truly the things that I feel.
You had support.
Right.
Which is funny because I get it. But there's this natural like tendency for people to not want to go to rehab or not want to go to a 12-step group or whatever. They want to do it on their own. But it's like, but why? Why wouldn't you want to? Like if I said, hey, let's go to a concert, you'd want to go with me.
Right.
If your car broke down, you'd want me to help you push it.
Right.
Why, when you're trying to save yourself from dying, you don't want some help? If I was like, hey, you want to make $100 million? Want me to help you? You'd be like, yeah, help me make $100 million. You're trying not to kill yourself with heroin or booze. Want some help? Nope, I got it, homie. I'm going to do it on my own. It's a weird phenomenon.
It really is. And that's funny because I've never heard anyone explain it that way. And I really love how you put that because that's exactly it. You know, because I'm convinced that no one will possibly understand the way I'm feeling. I am alone and I will always be this way. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like you've just kind of thought yourself into this box.
And what resonated for me in your story is that even though you started at 16 and 18, you quit drinking.
I became completely sober. I didn't even smoke. It was complete sobriety for me. Yeah.
You were miserable. So it, like, if there was any doubt, like, well, is this girl an alcoholic? This is what we talk about, you know, by the disease version of the alcoholic is the restless, irritable, discontentedness, how we are when we're not loaded.
Right.
It's untreated alcoholism.
Right. And that manifests, I mean, I see it all the time. It manifests in all sorts of ways. It's not about not drinking. It's like when you see someone after going through the experience with untreated alcoholism, I recognize it real quick in other people.
Oh, God. Yeah.
And without trying to take other people's inventory, you know what I mean? Like, I recognize how I feel about that and how much it reminds me of things that I would do, you know, just a very, very short fuse. I would, you know, I would be just so frustrated if I couldn't find a pen, the world would be over. And, you know, in my head, there was just so much going on. And I knew that I needed to make a change and I like wasn't sure what to do. And it was my year anniversary. I showed up and I was, you know, waiting for them to call 1 year and they never did. And I got so mad. I was like, I'm never coming back to this place. They didn't even know that I was here. They didn't know. How dare they? Right.
And jerks.
And you know what? A woman came up to me she came up and she gave me her 1 year medallion.
Wow.
And, for my 1 year, they didn't have any chips. They didn't have any. Yeah. So she came up and gave me her 1 year medallion. And I remember that. And that was like a really powerful thing. So since that, I've actually given away every single one of my medallions so far.
That's cool. And what people don't realize, a lot of times in like a 12-step meeting or some sort of support group meeting, those little things where you just go, hey, my name's Wes. Right. You hear stories later like, I'm taking 20 years, and if it wasn't for Bob saying, hey, my name's Bob, I would have never come back to this place.
Right.
Those little things literally save lives.
Right, and it's crazy. But here's the other thing about like recovery is that if I don't know you're suffering unless you tell me that you're suffering. You know, sometimes yeah. Sometimes we're a bit blind. We don't really know what we're seeing every once in a while, you know. So if you need help, you have to ask for help.
Got
to
ask.
And you may not like what they tell you to do for help, you know.
Right.
What looks like help to you may not be what you really need. Trusting people that have gone through this situation was huge for me. For the first time, I met people that were like-minded that I didn't feel so crazy around. For the first time, I finally felt like, whoa, do I have friends now? Is this what this is like?
Yeah. Yeah. I get that. Now, were you gigging this whole entire time?
Yeah.
So this is impressive because I don't think I could have done what you did. Like, stay on tour with head PE and just quit drinking and no way. I don't see that happening. So that's impressive. So it shows you it can be done. Right. For people maybe listening at home, though, you know, this is where the saying, to thine own self be true, because right. I think so many people deep down inside, they know they can't pull it off,
right.
and they still try and they fail, and that can right. be deadly.
Absolutely.
But you pulled it off, and that's cool. So what was one of the first songs that you wrote that's like, reminds you of your early recovery? Can you play that for me?
That was probably The Beast. And then I have another song called Seams that's also on Spotify if you guys want to listen to it. But I have this new song that I wrote. It's more so about like of when I started really getting in recovery and like started really trusting people that could help me. And that was huge. I didn't know what help looked like. So how could I trust somebody with that? You know, this is my life we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I've always trusted myself, so I didn't have to trust anybody else. And the song is called Carry Me.
Mm-hmm.
And, I wrote it originally for like an EDM artist and, yeah.
All right, cool. All right. Let me get your guitar going here. MB Padfield. Oh, by the way, because we didn't do the usual music break like normal, I haven't been doing my radio host job. So this is Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Gear. This is KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM station. I've been neglecting my duties. And we're talking to MB Padfield. She's 23 years old, 4.5 years sober. Writes pop songs for people and tours all over the country. And this is a song from your early, kind of current,
this
but
is
a sober song
right.
called Carry Me that's on Spotify.
Not yet. The other one's on Spotify. I'm working on, so I release a bunch of demos on SoundCloud. So if you want to kind of see the behind the scenes, follow my SoundCloud.
I like that stuff. Now yeah. And now they find you on Spotify as MB Padfield.
Yep, that's me.
So that's Meredith B for we don't know what, but it's B as in boy, Padfield.
It's things we can't say on the radio, Wes.
That's right.
All right, this song is called Carry Me.
Here we go.
My mind ain't my friend, it always feels like the end. Till you come around and pick me up again. Get me under your arms, take me away from it all. Over your shoulder just to get me off the wall. And thank you is the hardest thing to say when I really mean it, when I really mean it. And silence is the hardest thing to break when I really need it, when I really need it, yeah. There's no life left in me. And I don't lock my head. You know just what to say to get me out of bed. And I'm so far from perfect, and I don't deserve it. You've seen the worst of it, and somehow you still think I'm worth it. Thank you is the hardest thing to say when I really mean it, when I really mean it. And Silence is the hardest thing to break when I really need it, when I really need it, yeah. There's no life left in me. You know how to carry me when there's darkness at my feet. You know how to carry me, me, me. You know how to carry me, me, me. You know how to carry me. Anxiety is taking over me. I don't wanna drive no more. Depression, I feel it sinking in. And I don't wanna swim anymore. Don't wanna see tomorrow if it looks like today. But then you came and carried me. And all that changed.
How you come in here cold and just nail that.
It's fun, you know.
Especially
another day in the office, right?
Yeah. Especially the other song where you had so many fast little lyric rhythmic stuff. I was like, dang.
Man, I'll be honest with you. If I can make this a safe space, I honestly hate playing acoustic guitar.
Oh, yeah. You told me that
I hate
before.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been a huge
it's
acoustic
hard.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's kind of hard. For those of you that don't know at home, electrics are easier to push down the strings, and yeah, the strings don't hurt your little fingers. And,
right. It's a whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing. That was great. I appreciate you sharing that. And this is the first time that we've had somebody play. We had Jeremy Jackson in here, and he did an off-the-cuff little rap, which was cool. But this is the first time we had somebody sing a, you know, acoustic song. And
you should
and
do it more often. What's wrong with
I'm
that?
I'm telling you. Because I've been lagging, honestly. I just keep forgetting to ask our guests to bring guitars. But it worked out perfect tonight,
yeah,
because for some reason the songs aren't in here that you picked. But
happens, you know.
Things
if you
happen
follow
for a reason.
Both of those songs that were supposed to be on the show today are on Spotify. So.
And they're MB
Padfield
songs,
yeah,
on Spotify. So here's, we got like, you know, 5-6 minutes,
yeah,
left. We talk about the vortex of radness. So tell me, this is the important part. A couple things I want you to touch on.
Yeah.
What is keys to your sobriety? Maybe the first things you had to do to change from being suicidal. And then what are you doing today that makes you feel good and stay sober?
Okay. So the first one is harder than the second.
Okay.
The first one for me was, today I believe in a power greater than myself, and that was really essential.
Mm-hmm.
And we talked about this earlier that, you know, I had a difficult time probably understanding the concept of a power greater than myself was a really difficult thing for me. Meditating, prayer, all of those were really foreign concepts to me that I had a really difficult time, but you know what was the difference that I stuck around and I started learning the lingo and I started seeing the change in other people and like maybe that could work for me.
Yeah.
Another thing I did was I surrounded myself with like what I like to call like super spiritual people, you know, that are the happy, frolicky bunnies in
they
the
have
recovery
what you want.
Field, right? They, well, not necessarily, they have way more than what I want.
Okay. Yeah.
And, you know, I had to surround myself with those people. And then today, you know, to stay sober, staying sober is the easiest part of my life today, to be honest with you. Like not picking up a drink. It's managing the rest of that. It's managing the reasons why I picked up a drink in the first place. You know what I mean? And we can get rid of
those feelings. And
right. Because they're emotions and we're supposed to feel our emotions and like learn how to do that. So I have a difficult time, you know, managing my emotions at some points. And I have good days, I have bad days. And, you know, I'll be the first one to admit that, like, listen, I have a chemical imbalance fundamentally in my brain. I've always been this way since I was a kid. And medication was something that worked for me. I also, you know, when I'm on it, I'm super, I was into fitness for a while, and I found that that to be really helpful. But I'll be honest with you, it's like me staying in contact with the people in recovery. You know, someone told me a really interesting thing that I kind of like doing is, like, if you talk to 3 people in recovery a day, you should be good. You know what I mean? If you're talking, yeah, and not just talking, not necessarily talking about yourself, but asking how they are, you know what I mean? And definitely service and doing things that I wouldn't otherwise normally do. And those things are important to me. And I
what kind of service do you like that makes you feel good?
Oh, man. Well, it doesn't count if I tell you.
Well, I know what you're saying. What she's saying to people at home that don't know this, the concept is we're supposed to do nice stuff for people and not get accolades and praise and, oh, thank you, kind of just do it without anybody knowing. Right. But in this sense, you're helping people. So if I was, like, trying to stay sober, I'm like, well, what do you do? Like, what do you do? It's nice. What would you tell me? Some examples that...
I mean, I like to be... active, and I like to be honest about my recovery and in public. I came out in my sobriety closet 2 years in, and I wasn't sure.
My sobriety closet.
Well, it was weird at the time because, I mean, like, on the outside everything looked great. So why would anybody believe that I had an issue? You know what I mean? I was so caught up in the feelings of other people, and you know, and while I may have gotten some things that, you know, probably were misunderstood by people, it was a little difficult. But, you know, those things only solidified my belief that I needed this more than anything. I needed to be sober because I wasn't going to last long if I was. You know, I thought I would be totally dead by 27 at that point. Like, I was on a real quick trajectory.
Yeah. And you didn't care, did you?
No, of course not. Either. Yeah. Nobody, come on. Nobody that's dying actually cares.
People would say, dude, you're going to die. I'd be like, yeah.
Hopefully. Jesus.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
So put me out of my misery.
Yeah. So if you feel like that, you might be an alcoholic. You might have a problem. Otherwise, if you can quit on your own, then you can. But if you keep trying to quit or control it, and you can't, you feel miserable when you do get those days where you're not loaded, then there's a solution out there for you. So the $20 million question.
Okay.
And it's different maybe for you. I don't know, but I toured with Korn totally sober. I got that gig totally sober. What a lot of people are probably wondering is, they probably ask you all the time, how do you do music and be in the industry and stay sober?
Right. Isn't that crazy? But I'm telling you, it's just like anybody else going to the job. It's like, I have to understand that being a musician and being in sobriety, am I going to be around alcohol? Yes. Am I going to be around other substances? Yes. All right. So what can I do to prevent? What can I do preventatively to take care of myself? And that's readying my spiritual condition before I go into the room, you know, knowing why I'm there. And
having a reason to be there.
Right. And I'm not some like anti-drinking, anti-drug crusade. I'm not going to be like going into someone else's session and being like, no, there's booze here. We got to go home, boys. You know, I'm not.
Put out the spliff. MB's here.
Yeah. I mean, people are going to do what they're going to do. I just know that I have to manage my own sobriety. And that's the only thing I have to do. I just have to manage my own sobriety. Yeah. I don't have to worry about what else other people are doing. It's just for me. And, you know, that comes sometimes that's more frustrating other days. And you know, you got to listen to yourself and listen to your sponsor sometimes when you know that probably shouldn't chase down that lead. You know, just let that one go, because I know that like my higher power is going to line me up with something that is really going to be beyond the scrap heap of a world I've ever known.
Well put. Yeah. You know, so if you're out there and you don't have to be a musician, you could be a construction worker. You could be working at a plastic surgeon's office. He's flinging out.
These are really specific occupations.
Hydrocodone, everyone. The point is, we oftentimes are in environments that are very hard to stay sober. Mm. And what I heard that I wanted to expand on a little bit is that we go there and do the work, and then we get out if it's unsafe.
Right.
We don't hang out at the barbershop trying not to get a haircut. You know what I mean? We do what we got to do.
Right. I'm there to work.
There to work, and then we bounce. You know what I mean? We keep ourselves safe. And then, you know, like I was saying, for me, if you don't feel comfortable and you're trying to stay sober, you know, I always reference this girl I know. She always said, I can't stay sober. Why? Well, because I go out to dinner and everybody's drinking. I was like, well, don't go to dinner. Ding, ding, ding. So sometimes we got to do that. We got to just keep ourselves safe until we have a footing.
Exactly. Until you have a footing. I know people that are able to, you know, be in, I'm someone that, like, I can go out in nightlife. I still have fun, you know, in bars. I just don't have to drink. I still like going to see live music. You know, there's still other things other than just drinking for me. And you really find out who you are by not participating in that, because you find out what you really like and what you really don't like.
Yeah. I figured out that if it takes a being really drunk for something to be fun, it's not that fun.
Right.
Because I used to sit in a bar for 6 hours
straight.
It ain't fun. It's boring unless you're falling off the stool.
Right.
Anyhow, so for everybody at home, this has been Rock to Recovery Radio with my homegirl, MB Padfield. You can check out her music on Spotify. She does tour dates and stuff. I'm sure you have a website.
I do. It's myname.com.
Yeah, MB Padfield. How'd you come up with that?
Creativity.
Thank you for coming down here. You've been an amazing guest.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're super talented. I'm super stoked that there's women out there like you, young, staying sober, and still being creative artists like you are. So if you're at home, just remember, anything is possible. You're not too sick. You're not, you know, some people think they're not worthy of getting sober. There's always an answer. You just got to ask for help. Recovery is just around the corner. So this is Wes Geer on Rock to Recovery Radio, KX93.5 FM, brought to you also by New Vista Behavioral Health. And let's see if I can do this. We are out of here.
KXRN LP, Laguna Niguel, Laguna Beach. Member supported KX93.5.